This is Audible.
You're listening to the audio production of Losing Brave by Bailey Madison and Stephanie Miller, published by Blink and read by Bailey Madison. Chapter 1, August 11th, 2017, 6:20 a.m. Peyton, are you all right? Peyton opened her eyes and peered up at her father. The previously dark closet was now slightly illuminated by soft orange sunlight that streamed in through her bedroom's large eastern-facing window, and she could once again see the colorful clothes hanging around her head. She lowered her eyes and realized she was crouched down, her toes tightly curled into the carpet, and based on how white and numb her feet were, she had been in that position for some time. I'm good. She stood quickly and tried to act like she'd only taken a slight detour from her morning routine. The sudden blood rushing through her body made her lightheaded, and she felt herself tip into the sweaters overhead. She forced a bright smile to flash across her face as she surveyed the closet, wide-eyed and basking in a sea of options, while the latest Top 40s pop station played loudly in the background. What's a girl to wear? His eyes narrowed into a confusion-filled squint. You were hiding out in the dark because you weren't sure what to wear? Girl problems. The squint disappeared, like he usually did whenever she or any other female confounded him. Daddy seemed to accept her answer with a casual but uncomfortable shrug. He then swept his hand toward the bedroom in a formal invitation for her to leave the confines of the dark closet. Now, fully composed, Peyton tiptoed out of the closet, walked over to her dresser, picked up her hairbrush, and started to run it through her long hair. Back to her normal routine, 50 strokes. She glanced over at her daddy, noting his hair's contrast to hers. She'd always preferred the color of his hair. It reminded her of the fizz that perched atop her faux champagne every New Year's Eve. It was a happy color, unlike the curse she was left with. A mopey shade of brown that was more day-old coffee than the cafe macchiato hue her friends called it, out of kindness. Each morning, she was tasked with trying to apply enough shine and color to her cheeks and eyelids to detract from the depression that circled her face. He disappeared deep into the bowels of her closet, much like someone entering unknown territory and chopping their way through a dense forest canopy. "I don't know how you can find anything in here." His voice was a little muffled, as if the cotton cashmere and denim fabrics took him in and smothered him under their weight. Daddy, being from small-town Mississippi, meant that even if Peyton were 97 years old, she'd still refer to him as Daddy. If she or her friends ever called their parents anything other than Mama or Daddy, they'd be accused of rejecting their southern roots. Daddy, she asked a bit louder, you okay in there? Another muffled response from the closet. I'm fine, just looking. Looking for what? Pink. Your mama wants you wearing pink. You shouldn't have to search very hard. It's everywhere. Peyton smirked at her reflection, although she could only see slivers of herself between the many photos taped to the perfectly shined surface. Why pink? It's happy. He reappeared with a simple pink poof dress that was sure to make her look 12 years older rather than 17. This screams happy. Peyton scrunched up her nose. I think I wore that to one of Mama's women's club tees back in middle school. It was ugly then, and it's even more grotesque now. She carefully placed the brush back on the dresser, walked to the closet, swung the door completely open, and walked back into the cramped quarters. Is that light out again? He asked. She hung up the atrocity and inspected other options with an intensity she usually reserved for shopping online. Burned out a few days ago, she muttered. Daddy reached up and slightly twisted the bulb. It immediately resurrected and illuminated the space. Nope, that bulb's fine. Must be a wonky socket. Weird. I'll make a call, get someone out here to look at it. No. Her heart raced and she felt her face flush. She placed her hand on his forearm and squeezed. Don't do that. I don't want anyone in here. Peyton. He stopped himself and then slowly nodded. Anyway, her voice trailed off as she collected herself, smiled again, turned toward the pink section of her closet, and pulled out a blush-colored halter dress. It was much more Marilyn Monroe than Shirley Temple, and the only reason she knew who those 1950s starlets were was because Nana made her watch their movies every Sunday afternoon, and had for as long as she could remember. One time, while the three generations of sassy women watched The 7-Year Itch, Peyton's mama moaned over the fact that Nana prayed and prayed for a daughter like Shirley Temple, but she got stuck with a Marilyn Monroe. Peyton couldn't even fathom it. In Peyton's estimation, Lori Sassy Brave was the most straight-laced woman this side of the Mason-Dixon line, and the only thing that proved there was ever a time when this wasn't the case was the fact that she'd become a single mother 5 months after her 16th birthday. Her mama's more outgoing Marilyn Monroe phase was obviously short-lived. Daddy parked himself at the foot of the twin bed that sat under the window. It was piled high with so many clothes that he could hardly find a spot to sit. While one bed was a nightmare in the making, the other bed, which sat on the opposite wall, was neatly made and covered in enough throw pillows to make her daddy see putrid. Since David Brave wasn't a fan of the frilly stuff, but had no say in the decor in the upper floors of the house, when he had the funeral home portion redecorated a few years before, he'd made a point to request furniture with clean lines, and any time her mama so much as placed a throw pillow on a sofa, it up and disappeared with absolutely no trace of having existed. Although she never caught him in the act, Peyton believed that he shuffled them out of the house, and they eventually found their way to the incinerator, where he performed cremations. The next day, a brand new pillow would suddenly appear, and the cycle would repeat itself until her parents found a new territory to silently fight over. "Ladybug's full of gas and waiting for you," he announced as he scanned the room and scratched his head. Daddy pretty much always looked like he was lost or missing something. Sad truth was, he never seemed to find whatever it was he was looking for. "And Brody got her all shined up for you. He found her all caked in the mud. Said maybe you somehow took her four-wheeling or something." He stood quietly and watched her brush her hair. "Did you?" he asked in a half-serious tone.
"Did I what?"
"Take Ladybug four-wheeling."
"Course not. That thing can hardly drive over a pothole, so I'm pretty certain it would never survive mud and terrain."
Peyton grabbed her makeup bag and kissed him on the top of the head on the way to the bathroom. "Thanks for the gas, and I'll be sure to thank Brody for cleaning her up." She arrived in front of the bathroom mirror and started to lay her makeup out on the spotless countertop.
"I saw you bring someone in late last night. Who passed away?"
"Miss Humphrey. She fell off a curb and broke her hip." Peyton cringed, more from seeing her bare, slightly freckled face than the news of the broken hip.
She died of a broken hip?
No, she died during the surgery to fix the broken hip. Nothing uncommon for someone her age.
Lilac eyeshadow floated across Peyton's eyelid as she quietly digested his words.
"I suppose the most important piece of information is that she's no longer with us, and the children of Cornwell can rest assured that they'll never again get toothpaste in their trick-or-treat sack."
"That woman did have a thing for clean teeth," he muttered.
She smiled, then tilted her head toward the overhead light and carefully applied shadow to the other lid. Most girls would never be able to get away with purple eyeshadow, but Peyton wasn't most girls. At least not as far as they were concerned, anyway.
"I best go take care of Miss Humphrey. I wouldn't want her to get lonely down there."
Daddy stepped into the hallway and walked to the top of the stairs.
"Come say bye before you head off."
"Yes, sir." Moments after Peyton finished putting on her face, Mama's voice rumbled up the stairs. "Peyton Brave, breakfast is ready!" Her Mama's announcement pierced the eardrums, but it was nothing out of the ordinary. For over a decade, the broadcast had rolled through the house at the same time every morning. In years past, if it went ignored, she would stomp up the stairs, walk to the doorway, and announce it in person. But her mama hadn't walked upstairs, let alone stepped into Peyton's room, in a year. So the shrill voice now would echo through the halls of the Brave home, over and over again, until Peyton made her appearance downstairs.
"Yes, ma'am. I'll be right down."
Peyton slipped on a pair of sandals, grabbed her bag, and raced down the steps as she coated her lips in a slick, clear gloss. Peyton only had a few minutes a day with her mama before she left for work, and would miss her altogether if she wasn't downstairs promptly at 7. In fact, if Peyton wasn't downstairs at 7:10 to see mama off, she got a passive-aggressive text message promptly at 7:30. "I'm sorry that you weren't able to see me before I left," or, "I'm sorry you missed me. Perhaps you can make time this evening." Of course, that wasn't a request. It was a not-so-subtle demand of Peyton's time. And if she failed her twice in one day, may God have mercy on her pitiful soul. Peyton entered the vast kitchen, where an ungodly amount of wicker baskets hung from wooden beams on the ceiling. Like the throw pillows, they were one of her mama's decorating obsessions, and Daddy's nuances. And he was convinced that the rough basket surfaces did nothing more than collect the pollen and dust that caused his allergies to wreak havoc every spring. "It's about time you got down here," Mama huffed. "I was just fixing to leave. I have a full patient load today. Seems like everybody's getting pregnant lately." "Must be in the water," Nana said, her voice as breezy as the air that drafted through the open kitchen windows. Being an old-school Southern belle, Nana wouldn't allow the air conditioner to run until the heat of the day. She'd always made her family spend the morning with the windows open so they could feel the breeze on their skin and take in the relaxing visual of the draperies blowing in the wind. The family accommodated her wishes, which meant that in the hottest months of the summer, they walked around in a perpetual state of stickiness due to the sweat that accumulated on their skin. This morning was no different. Peyton threw her purse onto the counter and walked straight to the bay window that faced the back patio and looked out over the cemetery. She stood with her legs slightly parted and lifted her dress above her knees so the breeze could cool her already overheated body. "I'm beyond ready for fall. This heat and humidity can't be comfortable for anyone." She glanced over her shoulder and noticed Brody's head was stuck in the refrigerator as he scrounged around for food, and Nana sat on the kitchen table with a bowl of grits in front of her and sipping on a cup of coffee. The china she held gently between her fingers and supported in her hand had been passed down for 2 generations, and nobody but Nana ever touched it. Brody emerged from the refrigerator with a handful of cheddar cheese cubes. "Don't feed Pugsley," Mama ordered. "I caught him with a half-empty bag of beef jerky this morning." Brody covertly dropped a cube of cheddar onto the floor, then shoved several into his mouth. "All right." "His sodium levels are probably through the roof." If Mama hadn't been wearing her white physician's coat, she'd looked more like Peyton's sister than her mother. Not a line on her face, and with her milk chocolate hair styled into a high, effortless ponytail, she could have just as easily been on her way to cheer practice instead of her newly opened OBGYN office. "Peyton, act like a lady, please." Peyton let the hem of her dress drop back to below her knees and immediately felt flushed. "What brings you here this morning, Brody?" Mom asked. "I've got some big news. A guy I met last night maybe wants to go into business with me on that club I was telling you about."
"Oh, yeah?"
Peyton asked, walking to the kitchen island. "Yeah, I want to get your daddy's opinion." "He's going to tell you to wait until the shop's doing better. You know that," Mama said. "Best prepare yourself so you don't get your feelings hurt." "But I've got an investor. It's gonna work now. Just wait. You'll see." He walked to the toaster, pulled out 2 newly browned pieces of bread, and started to butter them. Big things ahead. Brody Wynn was practically Peyton's big brother. Ever since his dad died suddenly when he was a senior in high school, leaving him with no other family, and forcing him to drop out and run the family body shop, Daddy had taken him in as one of his own. Brody was one of the biggest talkers and dreamers she knew, but he never followed through with anything. So Peyton felt instant sympathy for her daddy, who was about to have to hear another one of Brody's grand plans. And she was thrilled she wouldn't be around to hear it. "Is David already downstairs working?" he asked.
"Yes, he's with Mrs. Humphrey."
"Really? What did her in?" Peyton caught his eye. "Broken hip." "Let's have a little compassion, shall we?" Mama suggested while briefly eyeing Peyton's dress. Interesting choice of color. Her voice is a little chilled, and the R disappeared at the end of the sentence. Her mama's coastal southern accent was stronger than most. Possibly even forced, since she couldn't claim to be a southern belle if she didn't actually sound like one. "What do you mean?
I chose it because you wanted me to.
Me? Her mother briefly shot Peyton a raised eyebrow before going back to doing a million other things, including avoiding a run-in with Brody, as he simultaneously moved through the kitchen and grabbed any food item not already taken. Peyton wasn't sure he'd even gone grocery shopping in the last 2 years. For the most part, he showed up at the Braves for almost every meal. And when he didn't stay to eat, he raided the fridge and pantry and made off with whatever he could fit in his arms. Peyton scrutinized the pink dress, which now felt more like a garbage sack, and then eyed the bologna sandwich her mother was smothering in mustard.
Perhaps a little lighter on the condiments, please.
She was actually more of a Miracle Whip girl, but due to the calorie count, her mama only let her have it on the weekends. Mama stopped herself, then took the opposite edge of the knife and scraped some of the yellow substance off the bread.
I'm preoccupied.
With what? I've got a 16-year-old girl having some complications. She's on edge, and I'm worried that the stress is going to throw her into early labor.
Stress can do crazy things to a person. Not that we know anything about that.
That last part was muttered under Peyton's breath as she grabbed a bag of Cheetos from the chip drawer and simultaneously kept an eye on her sandwich in case her preoccupied mama decided to add more mustard or forgot to salt the slice of tomato. To Peyton's relief, she didn't, and finally slapped a piece of bread on top and wrapped it in wax paper like it was a Christmas present.
You sure you want to choose those?
Mama asked while rinsing the knife, and the veiled order was so slick it resembled the satin lining in one of the showroom caskets. Peyton held the chip sack against the now rancid pink dress and cringed.
I suppose not.
She tossed the Cheetos to Brody and then gripped a bag of baked Lays, tossing it on the counter like an attorney throwing down evidence in hopes her client would be exonerated.
Were you talking about Misty McNeese?
The pregnant girl? Her mama dropped the knife into the dishwasher, kicked the door shut, and turned her focus to cleaning the spotless kitchen counter with some Ajax.
Do you talk to her much?
Not really. Peyton grabbed some fruit snacks and threw them in the paper sack with the chips before her mother could make another snide comment. Such as, a moment on the lips is forever on the hips. Misty and I never ran in the same circles. She was more Dylan's friend. The maneuvering between Peyton and her mama was like a well-choreographed dance. They moved in unison while simultaneously talking without actually communicating.
By the way, you missed your dentist appointment last week. I rescheduled for next Tuesday at 3.
I promise that my teeth are fine. I brush and floss every day.
You missed your teeth cleaning twice now. I keep forgetting. You're supposed to get them done every 6 months.
Peyton walked to the hallway and pressed on the intercom, situated at the top of the basement steps.
Daddy, please tell Mama to leave me be about the dentist.
A few moments later, her daddy's response crackled back.
Lori, leave her be about the dentist.
He sounded distant, which made Peyton suspect Daddy's assistant, Maggie, was the one who'd gotten up and pressed the return button so Daddy could keep working.
Her teeth are going to rot out of her head, Mama asserted.
They will not rot, but Mrs. Humphrey will if you two don't let me finish this embalming. Life and death. The reality of Mama and Daddy's occupations often amused Peyton. One helped bring life into the world, and the other helped to usher it out, or at least made it look prettier after it went. Peyton plopped onto the stool that sat at the top of the basement steps, but kept her finger firmly planted on the intercom button, so her father could hear the continuing conversation.
I brush and floss twice a day. What more do you want?
I want you to go to the dentist every 6 months like normal people do. She heard Daddy's footsteps approach the intercom.
Normal people don't go to the dentist every 6 months, Lori. Obsessive people do.
Quit taking her side! The two-story argument left some tension hovering in the floorboards below Peyton's feet. More tension than being caught eating a bag of crunchy Cheetos, then chasing it with the moon pie and downing it with sweet tea ever could.
Put it on your calendar. Mama, I...
Now, please. Peyton pulled out her phone and entered the appointment and held the phone in front of her mother's face.
Feel better?
Yes. Peyton laid her phone on the counter, grabbed another bag of fruit snacks, and shoved them in her brown paper lunch sack while her mama kicked her routine into overdrive.
Okay, I best be going.
She collected her briefcase and medical bag. As she turned back around, she did a once-over of the pink dress, pursed her lips, and then tore off down the hallway.
Add a little color to your cheeks, she hollered as she passed through the front door. Peyton picked up a perfectly polished silver serving spoon out of the drawer and tried to look at her reflection to check her foundation to blush ratio.
Looks fine to me.
She dropped the spoon back into the drawer and slammed it shut with her hip. Nana stood from the table, straightened her floral cotton dress, and grabbed her pocketbook.
All right, I'm off to the bus station.
Peyton and Brody shared a quick glance. Nana slowly strolled over, kissed Peyton on the cheek and Brody on the forehead, then moseyed down the hallway and out the front door without another word. Pugsley waddled not far behind. Peyton rushed over, cranked on the air conditioner, and then grabbed her lunch sack and purse, raced back to the basement steps, and pushed the button again.
Daddy, Brody's here, says he has some news for you.
Great news, Brody mumbled with a piece of toast hanging from his mouth as he started closing windows.
I'll be up in a minute, Brody. Make yourself at home.
He always does.
She and Brody rolled their eyes at each other before Brody closed the last window and took another large bite of his buttered toast.
All right. Bye, Daddy. See you when I get home.
Have a great day, sweet girl.
She removed her finger from the button, quickly ran her hands over her dress to smooth out any wrinkles, and turned to Brody with a large smile.
Best of luck with Daddy.
Thanks.
What about my blush situation? She asked.
Looks fine to me.
I'll take it.
She walked outside onto the patio, where Nana now sat in all of her splendor. A regal woman, Nana was always impeccably dressed, and at the moment had her hands on her pocketbook and bright red lipstick applied in mass quantity. As she waited on the porch for a bus that would never come. Peyton kissed her grandmother on the cheek and gently primped her over-teased silver hair.
Have a great morning, Nana. Are you going to be okay out here?
Yeah, I'll be just fine, Peyton. Just fine. It's a little humid out. Hope it don't mess up my hair.
No, ma'am. Your hair looks beautiful, just like it always does.
Well, I'll be. You're a sweet little bug, ain't ya?
Nana elongated every word as it left her mouth, a true moonlight magnolia drawl that could lure anyone into a trance.
I try.
Peyton gave Pugsley a quick pat on the head and then skipped down the steps.
I'm fixing to head off to school. Do you need anything before I go?
No, sugar. Leave me be. I'm just waiting on the bus.
All right. I'll be back later.
Peyton walked out into the yard.
Peyton!
Brody hopped down the steps. You were so worried about your makeup, you forgot your phone. She expelled a sigh of relief and clutched her hands to her chest.
Thanks, Brody. You're a lifesaver.
He shrugged, then wiped his nose on his shirt sleeve like a first grader before tossing her the phone.
Sometimes I think you'd lose your head if it wasn't attached to your neck.
Sometimes I think you're right, but Daddy's worse.
She made her way to a bright red vintage Volkswagen convertible bug. And thanks for cleaning, Ladybug. I'm not sure how she got so dirty.
He laughed. You don't remember driving through about a foot of mud?
Not really.
She tossed her book bag inside, then turned her attention to her cell phone.
Arguments with your mama first thing in the morning means no time for a stop at the coffee shop. Tragedy, she tweeted.
Peyton took one more look toward the patio.
Bye, Brody.
Bye, Nana.
Soar, Peyton Bell Brave, Nana shouted. Soar!
And soar she did, right through Cornwall, Mississippi, a town she'd lived in her entire life. It was situated not far from the river and directly on the bayou, not to mention a hop, skip, and a jump from New Orleans. Cornwall, where the moss hanging from the trees was as heavy as the southern accents. And Peyton thought the need for the townspeople to be considered among southern elite. The town was small enough to be quaint and large enough to matter. But if a person moved there hoping they'd blend in and go unnoticed, they moved out within a matter of months. She knew firsthand that anonymity was an impossibility. Everyone was in your business, and your business depended on it. Like the Bray Family Funeral Home, stores were all family-owned and operated, and had been for generations. While Peyton and her friends dreamt of having a Starbucks, there was no way the town council would ever let something so common and trendy situate itself on Main Street. With a sigh and another coffee-craving pang, Peyton pulled Ladybug into the Cornwell High parking lot, where students arrived for the day. Some walked slowly, clearly dreading the reality of school starting in a matter of minutes. Others seemed to almost tremble with excitement
as they made their way directly into the school building. She waved to passing classmates as she threaded Ladybug through the rows of vehicles, straight up to the first parking spot. A sign perched in front read, Senior Class President. It was a title she'd won with hardly any effort. Perhaps because she never admitted that she only wanted the position for the primo parking spot. Once the car came to a stop, Peyton checked her makeup one last time in the rearview mirror, added a bit more blush and lip gloss, put a big smile on her face, and then climbed out, grabbing her book bag in one hand and lacing the car keys between her fingers in the other. She slunk past Ladybug and strolled into Cornwell High. Peyton hadn't made it 10 steps inside the building before her best friend Star rushed up to her with a giddy look on her face and her cell phone clutched in her hand. Peyton and Star had been friends since sophomore year. They had started off as adversaries when they both ran for freshman homecoming court princess. But after Peyton won the coveted spot and somehow managed to survive Star's catty attacks for the remainder of the year, she took Nana's advice and decided to befriend her. As Nana always said, it's safer to stand beside the bear than beside the honey. Truth was, they moved up the social ladder faster together than either could have alone. And while the duo often had difficulty tolerating each other, Peyton managed to find some things she liked about Star and forced herself to focus on those. Plus, Peyton was an eternal optimist, and she truly believed that if they hung out together long enough, she could turn Star to the nice side. But so far, 2 years hadn't been long enough to get the job done. Guess what? Star squealed. You found a boy. He will make it another day if you don't bless him by your presence. How'd you guess? Peyton appreciated that Star was often naive and optimistic, but she was also exceedingly arrogant and genuinely believed in her soul that any boy should and would be honored to call her his girl. Of course, her soul wasn't the deep sort. It was more wading pool depth, so any feelings she did have were fleeting, and the joy of being some boy's girl quickly turned to a deep disdain for the same boy whose eyes and attention eventually wandered. It was Star's expectation that she should attract more attention than Peyton ever could, that drove Peyton up a literal wall. Sure, Peyton was newer to the in crowd, but her struggle to get to the top was partially what cemented her in place. Being born to a single mother from the wrong side of the cove hadn't made things easy. When Mama conveniently married David Brave, who was well-respected, from family money, and much older, it hadn't gotten a great reaction from Cornwell's upper society. In fact, the Braves were excluded from social events until Mama finished med school the summer before Peyton and Dylan's freshman year. Suddenly, Lori Sassy Brave was a woman of her own making, and that gave Peyton just enough of an opening to start her own climb up the social ladder, a ladder she'd scale by honing her beauty, charm, leadership skills, as well as her mama's new connections with certain families, until she rose to the top. Peyton Brave. Peyton turned at the voice that boomed through the double doors she'd just entered. Ethan? The 20-year-old, once a classmate of Brody's, stood halfway in the doorway, his ball cap facing backward on his head. Since he wasn't a student at Cornwall High anymore, he wasn't allowed to enter the building. Got something for you. She held her pointer finger up to Star, stopping her incessant rambling. Pause, please. Star raised her cell phone to within inches of her nose and started typing. Seconds later, a notification pinged on Peyton's cell, and she unlocked it to read Star's tweet. At a star is born 00. Always a lady in waiting, never the queen. What say you, at Peyton B. Brave? Hashtag pass the scepter. She looked up to make sure a path was clear to the doors, and then started reading her friend's quick responses as she walked toward Ethan. At Savage Josh 16, at a star is born 00. Don't blame at Peyton B. Brave. Some things just come naturally. Hashtag no scepter for you. At Lindy Blue Hughes, at a star is born 00, at Peyton B. Brave, at Savage Josh 16, hashtag catfight, hashtag save the scepter. Here. Ethan pulled a paper cup from behind the door. Triple venti, half sweet, non-fat caramel macchiato. She stared at the cup and couldn't believe what she saw. I didn't order that. Well, someone did. He thrust the steaming hot drink into her hand. Who? I don't take the orders, I just deliver them. See you around. Ethan walked between the rush of bodies that approached the door like salmon swimming upstream, and left Peyton holding a drink she hadn't ordered, but desperately needed. Star's face contorted in utter disdain as Peyton returned. You had coffee delivered? That's even a whole new level for you.
I didn't. She held the coffee up and spun the cup in her hands, looking for a person's name or note. There was nothing.
Shocking, Star said. Peyton has another admirer.
Chapter 2, August 11th, 2017, 12:30 p.m. Peyton, Star, and Lindy walked from the picnic tables outside the cafeteria, threw their lunch sacks away, and made their way back into the school building. Only 30 minutes of lunch meant that Peyton was always famished by the end of the school day. Of course, this caused her to sneak several snacks before dinner. She never copped to it, though. It was best if homecoming royalty never admitted to wanting to eat their weight in chocolate, and it was even better if you didn't admit it to Mama.
Hey, listen, Star purred. Spencer asked me out again for this weekend.
Peyton conjured up a smile as she plunged straight through the mob crammed in the hallway, talking about the latest gossip and slamming their metal lockers with gusto.
Good for you.
He asked if maybe you might want to come.
On your date?
No, thank you. I'm not a big fan of being a third wheel.
You wouldn't be a third wheel. We thought we'd invite Joshua to come along.
Peyton nibbled on her thumbnail and furrowed her brow as images of being the odd man out rumbled through her mind to the soundtrack of her sister, Dylan's not so shy or friendly thoughts about the boy. In social terms, Joshua was just her type. Perfect features, a nice car, polite speech, and top social standing. If the two of them got together, they would be seen as the most perfect couple at Cornell, and the one everyone had waited for. Everyone but Peyton. And Dylan. Mama tried to attach Joshua to Dylan once, and it failed miserably. Now it felt like Star was behind the scenes, forcing another pairing.
I don't know.
He seemed nice, though. But like Star, Joshua's ego was the size of the Gulf of Mexico. Not that it was his own doing. His daddy was a big lawyer in town, and everyone knew he pushed Joshua to be the best in everything. Even when it came to choosing a girlfriend, which could be why he was working on his second brave girl.
Hey, Peyton.
Peyton's mood momentarily perked up as she smiled and waved the blurred profile that quickly greeted her and disappeared, leaving the scent of obscene amounts of Axe body spray in its wake. Star nudged Peyton in the elbow.
Well?
I don't think so, Star. Come on, he really likes you. The bell rang overhead, and the activity in the hall became frenzied as everyone rushed to their next class so they wouldn't be late.
Honestly, he thinks you're the best-looking girl in school, and he's one of the few guys who's willing to overlook the fact your family's a little cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs.
Star, we're not crazy, we're... Right. Thanks to the funeral home house, you're more Adam's family oddball with a nana who's off her rocker. Star's comment left an ache of truth in Peyton's chest, but she quickly opened her mouth to object on principle before Dylan's boyfriend interrupted and slid between the girls and into the Spanish room without so much as a hello. Aside from dating Dylan, he'd spent plenty of time at their house since his mama owned the flower shop that provided most of the flowers for the funerals put on by the Braves. And while he didn't mind Peyton so much, he and Star weren't fans of each other. They'd never been in the same social groups, and although Star often told Peyton that their distance was due to superiority, the truth hovered more around the fact that Cole couldn't care less about status, privilege, or attention. He'd made it well known that he preferred to stay out of the spotlight and away from the constant drama that seeped into the pores of the majority of the town. Star kept right on talking, seeming oblivious that life existed outside her orbit.
So we thought that if all four of us went together,
I'd say yes.
Yes!
While it was true that a night with Joshua didn't quite sit right in Peyton's psyche, the idea of time away from Star suddenly felt liberating.
Unfortunately, I'll have to pass.
Peyton! The girls followed Cole into the room and made the turn toward their desk.
Joshua practically ruined Dylan's life, Peyton said. I feel an obligation to loathe him for all eternity.
I don't see how it's his fault she wore a hoop skirt or that Dylan, her skirt, Joshua, and his daddy couldn't all fit in his truck. I mean, really, who wears hoop skirts?
It was a costume party, and she was Scarlett O'Hara. The outfit was completely appropriate.
Still,
Star, they stuck her in the back of the truck. Alone.
The least he could have done is ride back there with her. The truck had a camper cover on it. She was fine with the whole thing. Are you taking his side? It was almost 2 years ago. She ended up landing Cole, so what difference does it make? Peyton collected the skirt of her dress around her legs as she slipped into her chair so her sweaty legs wouldn't stick to the plastic seat. It was the most humiliating night of her life. That's right. The most humiliating night of her life. Meanwhile, you're the only one holding a grudge. Nana's holding a grudge, too. Yeah, well, your Nana's a little. Peyton looked over and issued a silent warning. Star, of course, corrected and added, a little sweet old lady. Anyway, do me a favor and find a polite way to tell Joshua that as soon as hell freezes over, he and I can go out. Just don't use those words specifically. It's unseemly. We wouldn't want that, Star rolled her eyes. You're unbelievable sometimes. She pulled out her phone and started typing with impressive speed, much faster and with better accuracy than she would ever manage to type on a computer keyboard. And Peyton knew she had the C-minus grade in keyboarding her freshman year to prove it. Peyton spun in her seat and observed the classmates in the room around her. More than half were already suffering from the post-lunch lull and had their heads on their desks. Hey, Peyton. Peyton turned her attention to the girl sitting just to her right. Cassie Plummer had been in at least one of Peyton's classes every year since first grade, but the two girls weren't necessarily friends, or at least hadn't been in quite some time. They were now more friendly acquaintances than anything. Hey, Cassie, how's it going? Cassie smiled, as she always tended to. The girl was nice to everyone, even those who weren't always so nice back. And Peyton hadn't always been nice back. I'm really good. Thanks for asking. Cassie's eyes beamed, and her voice held a genuine appreciation for being talked to. So Peyton did the proper thing and continued the conversation. Are you ready for this test? The girl rolled her eyes and giggled. I was up until, well, after midnight. I think I'll do okay. I'm sure you'll do great. Languages always came easily to you. Didn't you win the spelling bee every year in elementary school? Cassie's eyebrows raised and her eyes brightened. Every year but the fourth grade. Dylan won that year. I came in second. Even though we were friends, I'm not sure she ever fully forgave me for beating her every year. Star loudly sighed a, someone look at me, sigh. Look, Peyton, if you don't find someone to date, you aren't going to have anyone to take you to homecoming. How can the homecoming queen not have a date to homecoming? Cassie smiled. You've got my vote. Thanks. Peyton started to turn back to Star, but her line of vision swooped down the length of Cassie's khaki pants. Several staples held the bottom hem in place, and her brown flats were badly scuffed. Realizing she was now staring, Peyton turned back to Star and tried to provide her with the attention she obviously so desperately desired. Homecoming, that's like, what, 3 weeks away? The Friday before Labor Day. Star stared glossy-eyed as she scrolled through her social media mentions. A homecoming dance on Labor Day weekend, she huffed. It's insane. Why can't we live up north, where school doesn't start until September? Who can look good in a formal when it's 90 degrees outside? Not for me, that's for sure. Star rolled her eyes. You know you're gonna win. No, I don't. Yes, you do. You frickin' win everything. Tension, por favor. Peyton dutifully turned her attention to her Spanish teacher and watched the somewhat elderly woman distribute the test of the day to students struggling to escape their carbohydrate-induced comas.
20 preguntas.
30 minutos.
Sí, señora, the class moaned.
¿Cuándo terminé?
Leer tranquilamente.
Sí, señora, had become the fallback answer to anything she said, regardless if they understood it or not.
Peyton knew that as second-year Spanish students, everyone else should have known exactly what Señora Ramirez was saying. But 3 months of baking their brains out of the cove meant most still couldn't remember anything school-related. The girl seated in front of Peyton swiveled in her chair, plopped two tests and Scantron sheets onto Peyton's desk, and turned back around. Peyton picked up the top printout and a Scantron, then turned and slipped them onto Cole's desk.
Good luck, she whispered.
He simply nodded and turned his full attention to the test, while Peyton glanced around at the room of faces who now had their eyes on her. And it wasn't because of her watermelon pink dress. As a matter of fact, within a couple of days, Peyton knew good and well that watermelon pink would probably make a comeback in the halls of Cornwell High.
She slowly moved her gaze to Senora Ramirez and waited for a new game of solitaire to illuminate the teacher's computer screen. Once it had, Peyton looked back down at her test and untucked the hair behind her ear as she read the first question. 1. ¿Cómo está tu hermano? A. ¿Es de California? B. ¿Yo como con mi hermano? C. ¿Está mucho mejor? D. ¿Mi hermano está allí? A second after she read the third option, she colored in the C bubble on her Scantron sheet. She glanced up at Senora Ramirez to make sure she wasn't looking, and then, with one effortless movement, tucked her hair back around her ear, being sure to hold up 3 fingers while doing it. As soon as the others saw the 3 fingers, they colored in the C bubble on their answer sheets, and quickly, but subtly, peered back at her in anticipation of receiving the next answer. The only ones in the room who didn't watch Peyton and worked the test on their own were Cole and Cassie. 2 years of Peyton watching her sister and Cole's relationship bloom gave her plenty of evidence that he was more of a make-it-on-your-own or fail-on-your-own sort of guy. It was one of the things that Dylan noted liking about him. He'd never taken a dime from his parents to use to take Dylan out for dates. Instead, he earned every penny himself by working at the flower shop. And even though Mama never approved of Dylan dating Cole, he never let Dylan lie about how much time they spent together or where they were going. In Peyton's eyes, he was a young man of integrity, which in Cornwell meant nothing, but to her sister, meant everything. And for Cassie's part, everyone knew that she was a good girl who wanted to accomplish big things, and she seemed to accept the hard work needed to succeed. Whereas many saw Peyton as Cornwell High's Mother Teresa, only younger and with less weathered skin. But she didn't see the harm in getting a little help now and then, since she so often gave it. And while she didn't have to help everyone, only Zoe and a few others deserved the favor, her willingness certainly didn't seem to hurt her standing in everyone else's eyes. Once those eyes were back on Peyton, she shook her head a bit to let her hair fall back over her face, so the process could repeat itself for all 20 questions. At the end of the class, the victorious group turned in their answer sheets on the way out of the room. Zoe walked up beside Peyton as they exited the room. She awkwardly reached her arm in front of Peyton and Star and offered Peyton a few pieces of paper. "Sorry, I didn't get these emailed last night. I got held up." Star rolled her eyes and chuckled. "So we heard." "What does that mean?" Zoe whimpered as her shorter legs scurried to heap up their trek to calculus. "It means you and Simon Teal were spotted together at the cove after midnight." Zoe's jaw dropped and her cheeks blushed. "Is anything private anymore?" "No," Star said bluntly. "Nothing is private, and it never was. Someone's always watching." "Who was watching?" Zoe asked. "What? Do I look like TMZ?" Peyton scanned the papers for a few seconds, and then summoned every ounce of attention she could spare and gave them to the humiliated girl walking beside her. "I'm ruined," Zoe whispered, tears on the brink of falling. "No," Peyton soothed while giving her a sympathetic smile and a gentle rub of her arm. Living above a funeral home meant that she was always running into people who needed some sympathy. She excelled at giving it. Star, on the other hand. "Ruined?" Star snapped. "What century are we in?" "Peyton," a deep voice interrupted their chatter as they walked into the room. Alarmed, Peyton quickly turned to face the front of the room.
"Yes, Mr. McDonald?"
"One-to-one function. Explain it, please." After only a split second of thinking, Peyton quickly flipped through her calculus book, desperate to find the correct page. "You don't need the book. You know this. Come on. One-to-one function." Her heart raced and her chest tightened. Still standing at the front of the room, she felt all eyes on her. One-to-one function. The phone vibrated in her hand. As soon as Mr. McDonald's back was to her, she glanced down and read the text from Zoe out loud.
"When no two values of X produce the same Y."
"Correct." Mr. McDonald turned his attention to his next victim, and Peyton rushed to her desk and cowered so far into her seat that the hem of her dress almost hit the floor. She placed the side of her hand over her brow like a visor, then peered over at Zoe and mouthed, "Thank you." By the grace of God, Peyton was spared from being called on again. Finally, because he was either out of material or out of patience, Mr. McDonald awarded everyone free time for the remainder of the period. Star didn't hesitate to pick up where she'd left off before Spanish began. "Heading to the Cove after school?" Star asked. "Joshua will be there."
"I'm not sure."
"It's the championship."
"I know it's the championship, but you've got to crown the winner."
"Why do I have to crown the winner?" "Because Dylan won last year, and since she isn't here to crown them, everyone expects you to."
"Why?"
"She was your sister. It's what..." Peyton felt her jaw turn nearly rigid.
"She is my sister." She managed to speak through gritted teeth.
"Right. That's what I meant." Peyton slid her textbook off the desk, jammed it into her backpack, stood from her seat, and quickly moved down the row of desks toward the exit. She escaped the room just as the bell rang out, and managed a few seconds of a silent hallway before classroom doors all through the hallway flew open and students burst forth. Once at her locker, Peyton worked on the combination, 31-19. Her eyes moved to the locker next to hers. Dylan's. Being one of the few people left in town who still believed that her sister might come home and life would get back to normal, Peyton begged the school to let her locker stay empty, waiting for Dylan's return. They obliged, and also allowed Cole to switch lockers with Sean Breen, since his sat just to the right of Dylan's. When summoned to the office to discuss the matter with Peyton and Cole, Sean didn't put up much of a fight about the locker change because, well, who wants to be beside a locker that's become nothing more than a shrine to a missing girl? On the first day of school, Dylan's locker was decorated from top to bottom with notes, and Peyton received a lot of sympathy from her classmates. But a few weeks had passed, and everyone had already moved on. Peyton got the feeling everyone wanted her to do the same. Not wanting to catch the attention of others and become the topic of conversation for obsessing over her sister's disappearance, she only allowed herself to look at the locker for 3 more seconds before she forced her attention back to her own. 23. The lock popped. She opened the door, tossed her calculus book back inside, and pulled out The Complete Tales and Poems of Edgar Allan Poe. She took in the cover for several seconds and ran her hand over the slick surface.
"Poe,"
she muttered. "You okay?" She didn't need to look his direction. She knew Cole's voice, his distinct speech. Unlike everyone else in town, he didn't have an accent. He carefully enunciated his words, but always sounded as if he had a stuffy nose. The sounds came more from his throat than mouth and nose, and his manner of speaking was more formal. No mama or daddy from him. He addressed his parents as mom or dad. Dylan once told Peyton that she wasn't sure if he spoke so formally due to his specialized training, or if he thought saying mama and daddy was too childish. Either way, it was just another thing that made him different. That and the fact that he suffered from an autoimmune disease and lost his hearing in the 6th grade. He spent his 7th grade year away at the school for the deaf, learning how to live in an unhearing world. When he returned, he was more of an outsider than ever. He didn't act like anyone else, and he didn't sound like anyone else. He didn't fit, and he didn't seem to care. A concept Peyton found both enticing and unattainable, even foreign. And then there was the fact his voice recently started leaving her with an odd balance of feeling on edge, but somehow comforted at the same time.
"I'm fine."
Out of the corner of her eye, she watched him open his locker, and then reach over and reaffix the tape that held his note to Dylan in place. It read, "I love and miss you. Come back to me soon. Cole." He then ran the tips of his finger over the tape on the 4 corners of Dylan's photo. In the picture, her long brown hair was pulled into a tight ponytail, and she wore a slight smile on her face, almost more of a smirk. Dylan always hated picture day, and this photo was proof of it. As they studied the photograph, a silence grew between them, made worse by the contrast of the hallway noise.
"Do I go to the Cove in her place?"
she eventually asked, looking back at the book.
"Do you want to go to the Cove in her place?"
"No." He nodded, then shrugged, as if accepting her reality better than she could. "But you will." She paused and choked down his response.
"Yes." Peyton slammed her locker shut and walked away without another word falling out of her mouth, but her mind swimming with them. 4 p.m. The Cane of the Mountain Championship. Winner takes all. A pot of cash, a gift card to the local coffee shop, free admission to all school functions for the year, and most of all, bragging rights. It was quite the spectacle, and anyone who was anyone, and some who weren't anyone at all, were there. Even Peyton, who'd finally accepted that it was her duty to be at the Cove along with the others. Dylan was always the one who loved the beach and playing in the water. Peyton only went on special occasions, or to make an appearance from time to time. Like everyone else, she and her friend staked out a section of sand with colorful beach towels and peeled away any extra layers of clothing to reveal the bathing suits they'd changed into after last bell. As she glanced around, she noticed that, like always, everyone huddled in the same groups that collected in school hallways and sat by sections in the lunchroom on weekdays or in church pews on Sundays. None of them showed any interest or courage to casually walk to a different group and strike up a conversation. Peyton watched Star and Spencer frolic in the water several yards away from the swim platform. They took turns trying to dunk each other under the water's surface, but it appeared to Peyton that it was more an excuse to put their hands all over each other than to actually submerge one another. A shrill scream momentarily turned Peyton's blood cold and spun her attention to the wooden platform in the middle of the water, where a senior lifted a sophomore girl above his head and threw her over the side and into the water with a violent splash. Peyton! She twisted around enough to spot Joshua as he appeared out of the thick brush of the woods. The bright orange swimsuit he was wearing stood out against his tanned skin, and his flip-flops tossed sand into the air as he walked her way. "Why aren't you in the competition?" she asked. "I've got nothing to prove." He slunk up beside her and observed the anarchy on the water. "That platform sure has seen a victim or two." She laughed, surprisingly a bit charmed by his attention. "It does get pretty vicious." With her eyes hidden behind her dark sunglasses, she was safe to watch him sit on the edge of her towel and sink his feet into the sand. He slid his sunglasses off his nose and perched them on the top of his head and looked over at her with a half smile. "So? Get this. I checked the weather, and you aren't going to believe it, but hell just froze over." Peyton felt her body recoil. Star wasn't supposed to word it quite so harshly. "I apologize." "It's good for a guy to know where he stands, even if it is in the pits of a fire." Trying to remain unfazed by his advances, she focused on the action in the water. "Come on, Peyton. Lay aside our differences, whatever they are. Give me a chance." "They aren't differences as much as..." She pressed her lips tightly together, thinking it best not to bring up his atrocious date with Dylan. "You'd have a good time. We have a lot more in common than you think."
"Like what?"
"I like..." Out of the corner of her eye, she watched him glance at her brightly colored bikini. "Red." A bit unsettled by his leering, she cut her eyes back to the action on the water and tried to ignore the fact that the muscles in her neck were tensing up.
"We live in the South. Everybody likes red. It's what we do."
"All of my friends are your friends, and my parents are friends with yours."
"I don't believe they are."
"Okay, so they're friendly. Sometimes," he corrected.
"You dated Dylan,"
she slipped, her intention to avoid the topic failed miserably.
I think it would be odd."
"I didn't date Dylan. I went out with her twice freshman year. We were an epic fail." She sighed. "I never went out with her again. For some reason, she wanted to be with Cole, and you and I both know it." Yes, she did know. When her overbearing mama forbid Dylan to date Cole, they broke up for the whole first semester of freshman year. Her mama convinced Dylan that if she'd just be open to other options, Joshua especially, she'd realize that Cole wasn't all that she thought he was. Mama was dead wrong. Peyton let her focus go beyond the participants. She couldn't watch anymore. It didn't feel right. Like nothing happened. Nothing was missing, and life was back to normal.
"Did you by chance have a coffee delivered to me at school today?"
"Why?"
"Somebody had one delivered, but whoever it was didn't give their name."
"Maybe someone is priming you up so they can ask you to homecoming."
"I don't want to go to homecoming."
"What do you mean?" Isn't homecoming a high school girl's Comic-Con or something? Girls like you live for that stuff. She closed her eyes and pictured herself under glowing lights, wearing a beautiful dress even her mama could love.
Yes, I suppose we do.
Hot sand pelted her feet, bringing her out of her fantasy world and back to reality, where Joshua was spraying sand around him as he turbulently dug his feet farther into the earth.
Peyton Brave, are you gonna go out with me or not?
There was a part of her that liked making him beg, so she refrained from offering a reply.
I'm gonna keep on asking until you say yes, so you might as well accept now and save yourself the annoyance.
She took a deep breath, picked up some sand, and let it slowly run through her fingers as she tried to ignore the squeals and screams coming from the platform, and focus solely on the sound of the waves rolling to shore due to the extra activity out on the water. She watched the sand so intensely that it probably looked like she was trying to count each grain. Once her hand emptied, she picked up another fistful, raised it to eye level, and let the sand slowly fall to the ground.
It's like an hourglass.
Joshua's brow furrowed.
An hourglass?
For a third time, Peyton repeated the process.
Like it could turn back time,
she muttered, now completely fixated on the stream of sand as it flowed through her fingers. Chapter 3, August 12th, 2016, 4 p.m. Peyton, Star, and Lindy were sprawled out on bright beach towels several yards away from the chaos on the swim platform. The sandy beach was too small and smothered by the thick forest that surrounded it, but it was big enough for Peyton and her friends to sunbathe on, and that's all that mattered. To them, anyway. Dylan sat perched on a blanket a couple feet away with Cole and Misty. They weren't close enough in proximity to be considered with the elite group, but not so far as to keep Dylan completely away from her sister. She wanted to stay close enough to keep an eye out, but far enough away to keep from being dragged into one of their daily melodramas. The championship was in full swing, and the swim platform out in the middle of the water was so weighed down by competitors that the barrels under the floating deck could barely keep it from submerging. The yearly event was three rounds of separate male and female competition, former CHS students versus more former students, followed by seniors versus juniors, followed by sophomores versus freshmen. Then, the final two survivors of each male and female round competed in one grand final battle to be crowned king of the mountain. Dylan sat at Cole's feet and watched him prepare to enter the water. He rolled his shoulders, stretched his neck by looking from side to side, and then swung his arms in large circles. To some, it might have looked like he was warming up his muscles. To Dylan, she knew he was buying time. He squat down beside her and placed his mouth to her ear.
I don't want to do this.
Then don't.
But I'm a guy.
I realize that. So it'll look bad if I don't. She hated to see the anguish on his face, but realized he had a point.
True.
Not taking part would pretty much be an affront to the entire male population of Cornwell, especially since your daddy owns the local gentleman's club. He groaned. Unfortunately, Cole, you're fully expected to behave like a Neanderthal, especially seeing as how the gentleman's club is completely run down and anything but gentlemanly.
Hey, at least it's clean.
Perhaps he was a bit on defense since he was the one who cleaned it every morning. He stood and took a deep breath.
That's all aside. Nothing could look worse than not taking part in this when my girlfriend's all in.
You'll do great. And very few people know we're dating again, so don't put too much pressure on yourself. She smiled and playfully slapped him on the leg. As he gave her a shaky smile in response, she stood and started to rub a washcloth infused with baby oil all over the front of her body, then walked over to Peyton and passed it over so she could wipe down her back and legs.
Watch out for Joshua, Peyton warned.
Apparently, Dylan wasn't the only one who noticed that the summer had done Joshua well. He'd grown a few inches taller and put on several pounds of muscle, which meant that pretty much every other girl in Cornwell would be happy to rest their hands on his much wider shoulders. She got the impression that even Peyton was affected by the results of his growth spurt.
He looks bigger this year.
Dylan heard a bit of admiration in Peyton's voice. Bigger doesn't mean faster.
No, it means harder to move, harder to push aside.
He's cocky. It'll be his downfall. Always is. She brushed off the imaginary obstacle by waving one hand in the air and then turned around to face her sister. This is Joshua we're talking about, Pei. He's a problem stem to stern. Stay far away.